Chapter 54. Hale Hunsicker's house was a posh poke in the eye. It wasn't ugly or even tasteless, and on a 5-acre lot it might even have been beautiful. Big as it was, the place wasn't nearly as bold or idiosyncratic as the fussy old Victorians on the bluffs back in Paradise, the ones built overlooking the ocean by the rich founders of the town. Yet there was something about the Hunsicker place that irked Jesse. Everything about it was just a little too big, too showy, too grand, too hungry for attention. In that respect, it was a reflection of the woman who was about to become the lady of the house. There hadn't ever been enough attention in the world to please Jen. At least not enough of Jesse's. The manor house, to call it anything else would have been a lie, sat on a low rise beside a teardrop-shaped pond. The gentle slopes leading down to the pond from the house were as manicured and green as the fairways at Augusta. The house, lit up for the world to admire by night, was built of red brick, real red brick, not that sham concrete nonsense. It was vaguely Tudor, but with its tiled roofs and arched doorways and windows, it had Spanish and Moorish elements as well. The things that stuck out to Jesse were the huge windows. Some, like the window over the main entrance, were elegant stained glass. Others were made up of hundreds of individual diamond-shaped panes fit into crisscrossing strips of dark metal. The windows recalled nothing else so much as a medieval cathedral. The house was almost the right size. Jesse was pretty sure there was enough room inside to play a decent game of touch football. Ari pulled the Escalade up the S-shaped driveway, paved with sandy-colored gravel. But the gravel was embedded and meant only to give the sense of real gravel. It was all very English, the sound of tires on gravel. Though it wouldn't do, Jesse supposed, to have actual stones spit out by spinning tires into the fenders of your guests' Lamborghinis or Aston Martins. Jesse laughed to himself, noticing that there were, in fact, two Lamborghinis parked farther down the driveway. Alongside the Italian supercars were a Bentley, three Porsches, a few Mercedes, a Vineland Park PD SUV, and a red Corvette. He pointed the Corvette out to Diana. "Probably the cook's," he said, to break the tension. The tension wasn't broken. It wasn't even cracked. She didn't laugh. Why would she? As Diana and Molly had pointed out to Jesse, this was a momentous night for her. For Jen, too. It didn't help with the tension that a soulless psycho-killer assassin might be out there in the falling darkness just beyond the upturned floodlights, behind the tan stone wall that ringed the property, or over the shoulder of one of the security guards stationed everywhere she looked. Nor was it comforting to Diana that her outfit didn't allow her to carry the weapon Kahan's man had issued her. She'd carried a weapon on and off for years, though for her it had never developed into a fifth limb like it had for many of the other agents she'd worked with during her time at the FBI. Suddenly, unexpectedly, she felt naked without it. Jesse could read her. That was one of the differences between Diana and Jen. He and Diana had been able to read each other since the day they met. With Jen, at least in the beginning, it was like reading tea leaves, or a shaman's tossed animal bones. Jen would say one thing and mean another. She'd ask for one thing and really want something else. Only after they'd parted, and with Dix's help, had the veil of Jen been lifted and her mystery solved. Jesse didn't blame Jen. There wasn't any anger left, not even any frustration. He knew who Jen was, that he had wanted her, and that he was complicit in whatever transgressions had occurred. "You look stunning, Diana Evans," he said. "I didn't even want to come to this damned wedding. Maybe this is what Peepers had in mind as my punishment." That worked. She laughed, finally, turned and pecked Jesse on the cheek. She wiped the lipstick off his cheek with her thumb. "Come on," she said, Let's get this over with before I explode. I need a drink. The entrance hall of the house rose up a good 30 feet, and the chandelier that hung from the high ceiling was meant to give a rustic, down-home feel. The three black wrought iron rings, each larger than the one above it by a third, were lit with 100 low-wattage bulbs meant to suggest candles. The effect was successful. They threw off a soft, welcoming glow. That was about as rustic as things got. The rest of the hall was polished granite, swooping staircases, and stained glass. One of Kahan's men, an African-American version of Ari, dressed in a black blazer, earpiece, etc., nodded at them and motioned to the left. When he gestured and his jacket lifted slightly, Jesse noticed the sig under his arm. Diana noticed, too. They looked at each other and shrugged. As they moved down the hallway, cocktail party noises pressed to meet them. There was low chatter, shuffling shoes, clinking glasses, a short burst of laughter. There were party aromas, too. The unmistakable smoky fragrance of slow-cooked brisket dominated, with hints of smoked salmon sneaking out of the room as well. Jesse was pretty hungry. Diana, not so much. The last thing she was thinking about was food. She stopped just outside the door to the room where the party was going on and did a final check in a hammered silver-framed mirror. She reached into her cream-colored clutch for her glossy red lipstick, applied a coating, and blew herself a kiss. She winked at Jesse. Her lush blonde hair was swept up, revealing the perfect geometry between her tanned neckline, shoulders, and clavicle. She'd had her makeup done to highlight her angular jawline and impossible blue eyes. She'd brought her killer cream cocktail dress with the spaghetti straps. It was at once simple, elegant, and utterly sexy. She ran the back of her hand along her bare thigh, looked at the way her stiletto heels shaped her calves. She smoothed out her dress. Diana may not have had a place for her Glock, but she wasn't going into that room without weapons of her own.